The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section heading, Materialism and Idealism. In the history of philosophy, idealism and materialism have very different meanings from their popular usage. Where idealism means having unrealistic ideas or unrealizable goals, and materialism refers to a desire to possess property and wealth. By that definition, Marx was an idealist, and Bill Gates is a materialist. According to their traditional usage in philosophical writing, idealism and materialism represent the two main divergent ways of looking at the world we live in. For the idealist, the mind, or the spirit, sometimes God, is the origin of all material things. The ancient Greek idealist philosopher Plato, for example, argued that the world and the things in it were determined by universal, logical categories. Therefore, every real tree was a copy derived from the universal, ideal category, tree. In fact, according to Plato, the universal ideal category was real, whereas the material manifestation was merely a shadow or a weak copy of the universal. Plato separated mind from matter and argued the former ruled over the latter. Idealist thinking permeates much popular thought. For example, the idea that historical change comes about because great men, women don't usually get any credit, come along with great ideas is widely accepted. But this doesn't explain why it is that anyone bothered to follow these leaders, or where the great ideas of these great men came from. For the materialist, all of reality is based on matter, including mental activity, which is itself a result of the organization of matter in a particular way. Whereas the idealist places the mind above and outside of nature, the materialist argues that the mind itself is a product of natural developments. Minds cannot exist apart from the material world, and the material world existed long before any mind was able to experience it. In this view, the abstract idea tree derives from our experience of actual trees. Universal categories are just generalizations that human beings made out of their experience of the real world. It is not consciousness that determines life, wrote Marx, putting it another way, but life that determines consciousness. One of the most common forms of idealism is the view that humans have unrestricted free will. The idea that individuals can do anything they set their mind to, regardless of economic, social, and cultural obstacles placed in front of them. Materialists don't have to deny that human beings are sometimes responsible for what they do, although responsibility comes in degrees, or that human agency can sometimes be decisive in changing the course of history, to discount this idea. The view that you can beat poverty if you try really hard implicitly accepts free will. Poverty, in this view, is not a social phenomenon caused by, for example, a factory closing or a chronic illness in the family, itself perhaps caused by some pollutant spewed into the air by some corporation. Rather, poverty is a personal failing. The most famous example of this kind of thinking came from former U.S. President Ronald Reagan, who once argued that the people who are sleeping on the grates, the homeless, are homeless, you might say, by choice. The dramatic rise in homelessness in the 1980s naturally had nothing to do with the fact that Reagan had the public housing budget and reduced federal spending to local governments. The flip side of this argument is that businessmen and wealthy professionals derive their social status from their brilliant personal qualities, not because of the silver spoon stuck into their mouths at birth. No one has ever argued that companies go bankrupt by choice. Yet every year, in spite of the wills of the individual businessmen involved, thousands do go bankrupt. The same applies to unemployment. Unemployment goes through cyclical rises and declines. It stretches logic to try and argue that a spike in unemployment is caused by a sudden case of mass laziness. The truth, as we shall show later, is that unemployment has economic causes that are beyond the control of individual workers or capitalists. Marx and Engels ridiculed the view that ideas determine reality. Quote, "Once upon a time, a valiant fellow had the idea that men were drowned in water only because they were possessed with the idea of gravity," they wrote. If they were to get this notion out of their heads, they could avoid drowning. Behind the humor lay an important point. Thought that bears no relationship to reality is impotent thought. The will to action is important, but if that will does not correspond to material possibilities, it doesn't count for anything. This can apply in obvious ways. Willpower cannot overcome a shortage of food on a deserted island. Or it can apply in more subtle ways. Willpower alone cannot convince everyone in my workplace to walk out with me on strike. What people say and think about themselves and the world must not be taken on its own merit, but must be judged in light of the underlying social and economic relations that govern their behavior. We must go beneath the surface of what often appear to be religious disputes, for example, to see these conflicts express deeper class conflicts. A distinction must be made, wrote Marx, between the material transformation of the economic conditions of production and the legal, political, religious, aesthetic, or philosophic, in short, ideological forms in which men become conscious of this conflict and fight it out. Another popular idealist premise is that human behavior is shaped by universal morals. Ideas of right and wrong that exist above society and above time govern human behavior. This fails to address the fact that different societies had very different morals. For example, in ancient Greece, homosexual love was looked upon favorably, whereas in other societies it hasn't been. A more current form of idealism is the idea that the international relations between states are not governed by military and economic competition, but by universal norms of human behavior, rules of trade, rules of war, and so on. All the glaring deviations in reality from these universal norms merely reflect the real world is an imperfect copy of the ideal world from which it derives. The abstract morality of good versus evil is used by opposing classes and by opposing nations in wartime to justify their own actions and condemn those of their opponents. The truth is, as Engels argued, people, consciously or unconsciously, derive their ethical ideas in the last resort from the practical relations on which their class position is based, from the economic relations in which they carry on production and exchange. Morality, in the final instance, either justifies the domination of the ruling classes or represents the oppressed classes, quote, indignation against this domination and the future interests of the oppressed. Sometimes the indignation manifests itself as a belief that the world should live up to the abstract moral ideas that various world leaders prattle on about. Sometimes it finds expression in the idea that we as individuals should live by a certain moral code. Many young people who are horrified by the inequalities of capitalism are motivated by a belief that one can change the world by changing one's own moral outlook and behavior. One need only reject greed and selfishness, and then impart this outlook to others. But this approach, though it might help its practitioner feel better about him or herself, doesn't change anything. Greed and selfishness are not the result of bad individual choices, but are engendered by the competitive and profit-driven nature of capitalism. A capitalist who is not greedy for profit is a capitalist who will lose out to his more greedy competitors. The problem with the notion that it is only necessary to change people's ideas in order to change society is that this leaves the social structure of society intact. This demand to change consciousness amounts to a demand to interpret the existing world in a different way, i.e., to recognize it by means of a different interpretation, Marx wrote of some German idealists of his day. In doing this, quote, they are in no way combating the real existing world, but are combating solely the phrases of this world, end quote. The materialist view is exactly the opposite. Morals are derived from particular forms of human social organization. Capitalism breeds greed, not vice versa. In societies that foraged for food and shared it as a collective, greed was frowned upon because it disrupted the functioning of the group. Marx and Engels subjected idealism itself to a materialist analysis, showing that it had historical roots in the separation of material and mental labor that came with the overall division of society into classes. Those who engage in backbreaking work, and those who are free to engage in mental pursuits, priests, for example, in the earliest class societies. From this moment onwards, consciousness can really flatter itself that it is something other than consciousness of existing practice, wrote Marx and Engels, that it really represents something without representing something real. From now on, consciousness is in a position to emancipate itself from the world and to proceed to the formation of pure theory, theology, philosophy, ethics, etc. Ideas are not suspended in air. They have real material roots. To understand why people think and behave the way they do, you must understand the way in which they work together to procure their means of existence. On this basis arises a superstructure of ideas and concepts people form in their everyday intercourse to explain and influence the world around them. End of section.